Brubaker, look out!
The three men on the back porch had their guns drawn. The man on the end at Bo's right was the fastest of the three. He had his gun out of its holster by the time Bo brought his rifle to his shoulder and pulled the trigger. Before the man could even fall, Bo had already worked the rifle's lever and swung the barrel toward the second man. But before Bo could fire again, Kara LaChance managed to throw herself forward despite the chains burdening her. She rammed a shoulder into Brubaker's back. The impact sent Brubaker stumbling into Bo just as the Texan squeezed the Winchester's trigger a third time. His shot went over the head of the third man. Bo flung himself forward on the ground as slugs whipped through the air above him. From the corner of his left eye, he saw that Kara had bellied down too to make herself a smaller target while the bullets flew. Brubaker had dropped to his knees. Bo spotted blood on the deputy's face. There was no time to see how badly Brubaker was hurt. Bo heard shots blasting in front of the trading post, too, and knew that Scratch was probably in danger, but he couldn't go to his trail partner's aid right now either. The third gunman back here still had to be dealt with. From his prone position, Bo fired again. Not surprisingly, the shot went a little low. It clipped the third man's thigh. He dropped the gun he had emptied by now and used that hand to grab a porch post and steady himself while he yanked another pistol from behind his belt. He and Bo fired at the same time. The gunman's bullet smacked into the ground about 5 feet in front of the Texan. Bo had already sent a slug ripping through the gunman's neck, though. Blinking rapidly to clear his vision, Bo shoved himself to his feet and levered another round into the Winchester's chamber. He was fairly confident that all three gunmen were dead, but he kept them covered anyway as he glanced over toward Brubaker. The deputy had collapsed, and he was either dead or passed out. And Kara LaChance was trying to crawl away, dragging her chains after her. The two men in front of the trading post had made a mistake by getting as close to Scratch as they had. As they went for their guns, the silver-haired Texan lunged forward and rammed his Winchester's barrel into the belly of the nearest man as hard as he could. That brutal blow made the man double over, and he forgot all about trying to draw his gun. The next instant, the butt of Scratch's rifle slammed into the side of his head and sent him sprawling on the ground at his companion's feet. The second man had to dart aside to avoid tripping over the man Scratch had knocked down, and that slowed his draw by a split second. That was long enough for Scratch to swing the Winchester toward him and fire. The first man had regained his senses enough to draw his gun and fire up from the ground at Scratch. Both shots went through the open door of the wagon. Scratch stepped back quickly and leveled the rifle at the man on the ground.
All right, mister, get up. Don't you try anything or else I'll ventilate you.
You killed Cousin Bob.
Yeah, well, you're lucky you ain't dead, too. Now get up.
Oh, my God! Dayton's hit! There's blood all over the place! Somebody help him!
Instinctively, Scratch turned in that direction just for the barest instant. That was long enough for the man on the ground to surge to his feet and lunge at Scratch. The midday sunlight winked off the long, heavy blade of a Bowie knife he had drawn from under his shirt. He swung the knife up, aiming to plant the cold steel in Scratch's belly. Bo stepped over to Kara and reached down to grab hold of the trailing chain.
Hold it. You're not going anywhere.
Bo ignored her and used the chain to drag her back the few feet she had managed to cover. Bo rested a hand on Brubaker's back and felt it rising and falling. Brubaker had passed out, but he wasn't dead. That was a relief, but Bo was still considerably worried about Scratch. He used the padlock to fasten Kara's chain to the handle of the outhouse door. She might be able to pull the handle off the door or the door off its hinges, but that would take quite a bit of time, and Bo intended to have things squared away by then. He set his rifle well out of Kara's reach, not that she could do much with it while her hands were chained behind her back, and grasped Brubaker under the arms. Bo dragged the deputy out of Kara's reach as well. Then he picked up his Winchester and loped toward the front of the trading post. As he swung around the vehicle, Bo's keen eyes spotted a man leaping toward Scratch with a knife in his hand. The slug shattered the man's shoulder and drove him off his feet. Scratch kicked him in the head to stun him and shut him up, then looked over at Bo and nodded.
Much obliged. I might have been able to get out of the way of that buoy, but it would have been close. Where's 42?
He was hit when they jumped us back there by the outhouse. Don't know how bad he's hurt. How about you?
No, I'm fine. Not sure about the prisoners. Where's that gal?
Chained to the outhouse?
Well, seems fitting.
Scratch turned toward the wagon and covered the two men inside.
Anybody really hurt in there, or were you just trying to distract me? All right, why don't y'all go ahead and bleed to death then?
He slammed the door closed.
We got work to do out here.
The man he'd kicked in the head was still unconscious. Scratch checked the one he'd shot.
Dead, all right. How about the ones out back?
Pretty sure they're dead.
You didn't find out?
I came to see if your mangy old hide had any holes in it.
And I appreciate that, but you better go make certain sure the other's a buzzard bait.
Bo kept one eye on the trading post as he hurried behind the building again. The five men who had jumped him and Scratch accounted for the saddle horses tied up outside. But the buggy and the farm wagon told him that at least a few other folks were still inside. They might not represent any threat, but he didn't want to take a chance on that. He checked the three men, finding them all dead.
Oh!
Bo trotted over to him as the deputy struggled to sit up. Bo grasped his arm and helped him. He saw an ugly red welt on the side of Brubaker's head. Blood had leaked from it and run down the deputy's weathered face.
Oh, what happened?
Looks like a bullet creased you and knocked you out. How'd he feel?
The head hurts like the blazes. How the hell do you think I feel? Oh, the prisoners.
They're all accounted for. Miss LaChance is all right. I don't know about Lowe and Elam, but I have a hunch they are too.
Oh, help me up. I gotta go check on them. They're my responsibility.
Bo assisted the deputy in getting to his feet. Brubaker was a little unsteady when he started off, but his steps strengthened. As he passed the bodies of the three dead gunmen, he looked down at them impassively.
Recognize any of them? I thought they might be members of Gentry's gang.
I never saw any of them before. They're not part of Gentry's bunch.
When Brubaker reached the wagon, he drew his revolver and jerked the door open.
Either you make a funny move and I'll smoke you both down. Are you hit? There you.
We're all right. Except I don't think Jim here needs to visit the outhouse anymore. Having bullets flying around sort of took care of that for him.
Shut up.
I didn't think they were hit, but I wasn't sure.
Brubaker backed off the steps and closed the door.
Is that the only one still alive?
Appears to be.
Morton, keep an eye on him. Creel, come with me. I want to get the gal back in the wagon before we do anything else.
A man in overalls appeared on the trading post's front porch, edging tentatively through the door.
You better stay right there, mister, unless you're looking for trouble.
No, sir. I'm not looking for trouble. They're just seeing if all the shooting was over, all.
It is, for now, anyway. You happen to know these hombres who jumped us?
The man pointed to the other man lying near Scratch.
Oh, the one with the busted shoulder is Jinx Staley. The other feller's his cousin Bob Staley.
They from around here?
Oh, born and raised in these parts, both of them. And never any good. Them or their relatives.
Who else was in the trading post with them?
Jinx's brother Mort's in there, along with a couple of their friends, Goose Tatum and Bridger Horn.
And the three of them went out the back while Jink and Bob came out front, am I right?
And then the shooting started. What happened, mister? Are you the law?
Right now I work for Judge Parker. My partner and I are temporary deputies, helping out one of Parker's more permanent star packers.
Scratch nodded toward the rear of the building, where Kara was back on her feet and shuffling along with Bo and Brubaker behind her.
Here they come now.
Kara was quiet for a change. But the usual murderous fury burned in her eyes. Her expression softened slightly, though, as she looked at Scratch.
Were you hurt, mister?
No. I'm fine, I reckon.
Good. You seem to be about the closest thing to a gentleman in this bunch.
She cast scathing glares toward Bo and Brubaker. The deputy swung the door open.
Get in there!
What about us? Don't we get to come out?
In a few minutes. I want to find out who these blasted troublemakers were.
I can tell you that. I've been talking to the fella on the porch. These gunnies are local boys.
Is that so?
Brubaker towed the wounded shoulder of the unconscious Jinx Staley.
Wake up, you polecat!
Don't do that. I'm hurt awful bad.
You'll feel worse in a minute if you don't tell me what I want to know.
To reinforce his words, Brubaker rested the sole of his boot on Jink's shoulder. The marshal didn't put any weight on it, but the threat was unmistakable.
Marshal?
Stay out of it, Creel! I'm handling this my way! Why'd you fellas try to jump us?
We heard about those prisoners. You're taking to Texas. We've always wanted to ride with somebody like Hank Gentry. Figured that if we turn these three loose, Hank would have to let us in the gang.
All right. Can't say as I'm surprised. Is there a doctor around here? Anywhere closer than Fort Smith?
There's a midwife who does a fair job of patching up bullet wounds.
Good. Somebody can fetch her for this boy. And you can either plant the dead ones or throw them in a hog pen somewhere. Don't make no never mind to me which way you do it.
Brubaker looked down at Jink and leaned a little on the young man.
Ah! Got your attention? Listen to me, Staley. I'll arrest you, but I got places to go and things to take care of. So here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna let you go. But if I ever see you again, around here or up in Fort Smith or over in the territory, I'm gonna shoot you. I'm not gonna ask what you're doing there. I'm not gonna even speak to you. I'm just gonna shoot you dead right then and there, you understand?
Brubaker bore down with his boot again.
I understand. You won't never see me again. Marshal, I swear it.
Good. You got any food in there?
Oh, yes, sir. We sure do. Some nice roast beef.
Bread?
Yes, sir.
Slap some beef between bread, then. Enough for the three of us. We'll get it when we're ready to pull out again.
What about the prisoners?
Enough for them, too, I suppose. And some coffee, if you got it. I promised them something to eat and drink. Now let's all get busy. The sooner we're back on the road again, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
The wagon continued rolling southward all afternoon, with occasional stops so the team of horses pulling it could rest. Late in the day, which ended fairly early at this time of year, Bo spoke to Brubaker.
Are we going to try to find a settlement with a jail so we can lock up those three for the night?
Nah, this wagon is sturdier than any backcountry jail we're liable to find. They can stretch out on the floor to sleep. Judge Parker just said to get them there. He didn't say anything about keeping them comfortable along the way.
You're a pretty hard-nosed hombre, aren't you, Marshal?
Try keeping the peace in Indian Territory for a while. You'll learn right quick that getting sentimental is a good way of winding up dead.
They set up camp in a clearing where Brubaker had pulled off the road.
We'll take turns standing guard?
That's right. Think you can stay awake and alert enough to handle it?
We stood many a night watch. You can depend on us.
Good, because it's your lives at stake too, not just mine. Hank Gentry and his men would kill you without even blinking an eye.
There was no outhouse around here, of course, so before it got dark, Bo and Brubaker took Kara into the bushes near the camp and let her tend to her business. Brubaker warned her to stay where he could see her head, and he kept his colt trained on her the whole time.
Why can't Mr. Martin take me when I have to go? He's nicer than you two.
He'd keep you covered just like I do. At least he would if he's got any sense.
Yeah, but I'll bet he wouldn't leer at me.
Dadgummit, I didn't leer. You're just trying to put a burr under my saddle, and it's not gonna work.
Scratch volunteered to do the cooking. He fried some bacon and cooked cornbread and beans to go with it. The meal was simple, but good. After everyone had eaten, Bo and Scratch checked on the horses one more time.
I'll take first watch. You fellas get some sleep.
It was going to be a cold night. These were piney woods, and the Texans had made comfortable beds by spreading their bedrolls on pine boughs. Brubaker tossed some blankets into the back of the wagon that the prisoners could use for warmth. The deputy sat on a log near the fire as it burned down, and Bo and Scratch rolled up in their blankets and dropped right off to sleep, with the innate ability of frontiersmen to grab some shut-eye whenever they had a chance. After a few hours, Brubaker would wake one of them up to take his place. Bo didn't know how much time had passed. He sat up sharply with his gun in his hands, unaware that he had even drawn it from the holster and coiled shell belt beside him. A few yards away, Scratch was awake and sitting up too, both hands filled with his Remingtons.
Take it easy, you two. That was just a big cat prowling around somewhere.
You got panthers in these parts, do you?
That's right. He's probably hungry. This time of year, the hunting's not too good. A lot of the smaller animals are denned up for the winter.
Well, as long as he don't try to feast on us.
Bo still sat there holding his colt. He frowned as he looked toward the area where the horses were picketed. Something was wrong, and after a second, he figured out what it was. Now he was even more convinced. The sounds came from the north, and so did the wind. That meant the scent of the panthers should have been carrying to the horses, and there was nothing like the smell of big cat to spook a bunch of horses. The team and the saddle mounts all stood quietly with their heads down, though.
That's not a panther. Those are signals. And I reckon it means somebody's in position.
Oh, son of a... You're right! Everybody take a shot!
The walls that enclosed the back of the wagon were thick enough to stop a bullet, so the prisoners probably were safe in there. The narrow ventilation openings were set high in the walls, so that even if a stray slug went through one of them, it wasn't likely to hit Kara, Lo, or Elam. The Texans were on the other side of the fire from the wagon, so they couldn't find protection there. Their only chance was to get into the trees. Bo rolled out of his blankets, came up on one knee, and triggered three fast shots at the muzzle flashes. Then he leaped to his feet and dashed into the pine. Scratch's twin Remington's boomed as he retreated into the trees as well. Brubaker's Winchester cracked from underneath the wagon. Bo pressed his back to the trunk of a pine. He knew that Brubaker was in a bad place. The wagon wheels didn't provide enough cover to keep the deputy safe for very long. At any moment, a lucky shot from the bushwhackers might zip between the spokes and find him.
Scratch, can you hear me?
Yeah, you all right, Bo?
So far, we need to circle. You go right and I'll go left.
Kino!
The shadows under the trees were thick. Bo slid to his left. As far as he could tell, the bushwhackers were all to the north of the camp. From the sound of the shots and the muzzle flashes he had seen, he estimated there were at least five of them. If he and Scratch could flank the attackers and take them by surprise, the two Texans had a chance to fight off this terrifying assault. His hand tightened on the butt of his Colt when he judged that he was getting closer to the area where the riflemen were hidden. He peered through the shadows, spotted a muzzle flash, and worked his way closer to it. The next time the rifle cracked, the sudden spurt of flame from its barrel was bright enough to reveal a man crouched behind a big fallen pine tree. Bo drew a bead and could have gunned the man down then and there, but he held off on the trigger. If the attackers were Gentry's men, as seemed likely, they were wanted too. If they could be taken alive, Bo, Scratch, and Brubaker could deliver them to Judge Southwick and Tyler, along with Kara, Lowe, and Elam. Dropping to his hands and knees, Bo crawled closer until he was only a few feet away from the rifleman, who had paused in his attack to reload. The man seemed completely unaware of Bo's presence. Bo waited until the bushwhacker thrust the barrel of his rifle over the log again, then struck with swift, brutal force. He reversed the Colt and brought the butt down on the man's head. The bushwhacker wore a holstered revolver, too, Bo discovered as he ran a hand over the man's body. He took that gun and threw it into the brush. Bo ripped strips from the unconscious man's shirt and used them to tie his hands and feet. That was the best he could do for now. He started stalking the next bushwhacker, sparing a thought for Scratch and a hope that his old friend was all right. Scratch had understood what Bo meant by circling. Scratch had holstered his left-hand Remington after reloading it. His right hand still clutched the ivory handle of the other revolver. He crouched lower as muzzle flame bloomed in the darkness only a few yards from him. He was closing in on one of the bushwhackers. He didn't want to alert the others that they had intruders among them, so he waited until a whole flurry of shots rang out before leveling the Remington and squeezing off two swift shots. He hoped that sound was his quarry collapsing with some good Texan lead in it. Scratch figured he would move on to the next bushwhacker he could find, but he had gone only a few feet when somebody exploded out of the shadows and crashed into him. Scratch didn't drop his gun. As more blows pounded his body, he slashed out with the Remington and felt it strike something with a glancing blow. Knowing the man was close to him, he lowered his head and butted hard in front of him. Scratch swung the Remington again, and this time the revolver's barrel landed solidly. Scratch ran his fingers along the barrel of his revolver to make sure it hadn't bent when he walloped the hombre with it. If you were going to hit a man with a gun, it was better to use the butt, but he hadn't had time to turn the weapon around. The Remington seemed to be all right. Scratch started working his way through the darkness again. It seemed there weren't as many shots coming from the trees now, and he wondered if Bo had already taken care of one or two of the varmints. Crouched in the darkness, Bo waited for a muzzle flash to pinpoint the location of another rifleman. As slugs zinged through the trees around him, he smiled grimly as he wondered if some of the bullets came from Deputy Marshal Brubaker's gun. Brubaker didn't know what he and Scratch were trying to do. As far as he would be able to tell, huddled there underneath the wagon, the Texans might as well have deserted him. Bo was willing to take his chances. He didn't have any other choice. Flame licked from the muzzle of a rifle in some brush about 20 feet to his right. He shifted in that direction. And then suddenly there was nothing under his feet but empty air. He lost his balance and fell forward, crashing down a steep slope. Suddenly, he was on the bottom of the ravine. Dirt and pine needles rained down on him from above, pelting his face and causing him to jerk his head to the side, even though the rest of his body still wouldn't respond to him. Bo knew what the little avalanche meant. Somebody was sliding down the other side of the ravine, coming down after him, and he was sure they didn't mean him any good. He willed his muscles to move, to send him scrambling away. but they were stubbornly unwilling for several seconds. He finally rolled onto his belly and with an effort pushed himself to his hands and knees. Before he could start crawling, a great weight landed on his back, knocking the breath out of him again. An arm looped around his neck and jerked tight, cutting off his air as a knee pinned him to the ground.
Thought I heard somebody fall down in this gulch. Thought you could sneak up on me, did you? You son of a bitch, I'll choke the life out of you.
Bo had dropped his gun when he plummeted into the ravine, so he didn't even have a weapon. His hands moved over the ground around him in the dark, searching for something, anything. His fingers brushed against a rough surface, lost it for a second, then found it again. He closed his hand on a piece of broken pine branch, slightly bigger around than his wrist. He didn't know how long it was, but when he lifted it, it felt heavy enough to work as a weapon. Knowing that he could pass out at any second, Bo struck upward and back with the makeshift club. He heard a scrambling sound, and more dirt cascaded down around him. The man was fleeing, climbing up the side of the ravine.
Come on, boys! Let's get out of here!
Bo braced himself with a hand against the steeply sloping side of the narrow ravine and heaved to his feet. He didn't have his gun, so he continued gripping the pine branch in case he was attacked again. That seemed unlikely, though, he thought, as a swift rataplan of hoofbeats drifted through the chilly night air and began to fade. It sounded like the bushwhackers were taking off for the tall and uncut, all right. Bo started trying to climb out of the ravine.
Bo! Bo, you around here?
Down here. Better stop moving around, Scratch. You're liable to fall in this ravine like I did. I never saw it in the dark.
Well, son of a gun, are you hurt?
Shaking up a little. Some bumps and bruises, that's all. Plus one of those hombres tried to strangle me. Reckon I'll live, though.
Can you get out? I mean, do I need to fetch a rope?
I think I can make it. Hold on.
A couple of minutes later, Bo reached the top and rolled over it onto level ground.
I'm out of that blasted hole in the ground.
Are you sure you're not hurt?
Yeah, but I lost my gun when I fell, and I'm not very happy about that.
Well, maybe we can find it later. Here, let me give you a hand. We better get back to camp and make sure old 42's all right.
And the prisoners.
I ain't worried over much about those three, but I expect they're fine, locked up in that box like they are.
Did you swap lead with any of them bushwhackers?
I shot one of them, I walloped another, or maybe it was the same one, I ain't sure about that. You know, we'll have to get a torch and check.
I knocked one out and tied him up. If he's one of Gentry's men, Deputy Brubaker will have himself another prisoner to deliver.
Heck, might be Gentry's own self. Wouldn't that be something?
Creel! Martin, are you out there?
We're here! We're coming in!
They followed the sound of Brubaker's voice, and a moment later came out into the clearing where the wagon was parked. The deputy hunkered on his heels next to the fire, stirring up the ashes and adding twigs and dried pine needles until flames began to leap up again and cast a circle of faint light around the camp.
Where do you two go?
Well, we're just fine, thank you most to death. Appreciate you inquiring about our health.
I can tell you're both up and walking around, so I know you ain't dead.
We circled around and flanked those bushwhackers. We were able to drive them off.
You kill any of them?
We don't know yet. We'll have to get a torch and go have a look. How about you, Marshal? You hurt?
No, they made it pretty hot under the wagon for me, but I wasn't hit.
Have you checked on the prisoners?
They all called out and said they were all right when I asked them. If you're asking if I unlocked that door to take a look at them, hell no.
I imagine they're fine.
The fire was burning strongly now, so Bo found a branch that was thinner and lighter than the one he had used as a club and set it on fire. That would make a good enough torch for him and Scratch to find their way around in the woods.
We're gonna take a look around.
It was difficult to tell exactly where they had fought their battles a short time earlier. Everything looked different in the flickering light of the torch. After a few minutes, though, Bo was convinced he'd found the log where he had knocked out the ambusher. He could see the scuff marks of their struggle on the ground beside the fallen tree. But the man was gone, and Bo was forced to come to the conclusion that one of his friends had found him and turned him loose. They were luckier when it came to the man Scratch had shot. That hombre lay on his side in a pool of blood, dead.
We'll take him back to camp so Deputy Brubaker can look at him. If he's one of Gentry's gang, Brubaker ought to be able to identify him.
Scratch bent and grasped the corpse's ankles. He dragged the body roughly through the woods, not being disposed to worry about being gentle with the carcass of a man who just tried to kill him. Bo had thought there was something oddly familiar about the man's face, and once they reached the camp and he was able to study it in the better light from the fire, he was sure of it.
I don't know him. To the best of my recollection, I never seen him before. That doesn't rule him out completely for being a member of Gentry's gang, but it's pretty unlikely.
I'd say you're right, because I think there's a definite family resemblance between this man and those Staleys who jumped us back at the trading post.
By God, I think you're right, Creel. This is another one of that bunch.
You reckon the rest of the family found out what happened at Clark's and they came after us with vengeance in mind?
That seems mighty likely to me. Blood feuds are common in this part of the country.
Yeah, they're common just about everywhere.
Oh, that's just what we need. Not only do we have to worry about a bunch of bloodthirsty desperados wanting us dead, now we got a whole clan of ridge-running hillbillies after us.
Not everybody in Arkansas is a hillbilly, Tex.
No matter what you call them, they're trouble. And that's one thing we already had plenty of without this.
You're right about that, Creel. And come morning, I know damn well what I'm gonna do about it.
What do you mean we're gonna cut west into Indian territory?
Scratch spoke to Brubit as he and Bo rode alongside the wagon the next morning.
Ain't it even more uncivilized and lawless than Arkansas?
Yeah, the territory may be lawless and uncivilized, but I know just about every square foot of it. And traveling along that main road makes us sitting ducks for anybody who's on our trail.
I can't argue with that, Marshal. But doesn't Gentry know this part of the country pretty well, too?
Sure, I suppose he does. And he's got friend among the tribes, too, hard though that may be to believe about such a bloody-handed scoundrel. But I'm betting those blasted Staleys won't know all the little trails and cutoffs as well as I do. So maybe we can shake them off our trail anyway.
Can you get that wagon through? It's pretty rugged over there.
Sure I can. It'll be rough going, but we can make it through. We'll head west a ways, cut down to one of the Red River crossings, then swim back east to Tyler. Might add as much as a week to our trip, but we'll stand a better chance of getting there safe with the prisoners.
You know, adding a week makes our wages not quite as good.
You're getting paid by the mile, too, remember?
Yeah, but if I know old Bigfoot Southwick in a do, he'll try to say he'll only pay us for what would have been the shortest route. He'll claim going the long way around was our decision, and his court oughtn't be out any dinero because of it.
Well, if he does, I'll...
Yeah, that's what I thought. Who among us is going to argue with a federal judge and come out a winner?
Let's just worry about that when the time comes. Right now, it seems like Deputy Brubaker's idea is a pretty good one.
You might as well call me 42. If we're going to be traveling together from now on 2 weeks, there ain't no point in being too formal.
I'll be glad to, 42. You can call me Bo.
Brubaker followed the narrow trail for several miles before hauling back on the reins and bringing the team to a halt.
I reckon we can stop here long enough to rustle up some grub.
Sounds mighty good to me. I'll get a fire going and put the coffee on to boil.
The prisoners had been quiet this morning. Bo figured they hadn't been able to sleep much on the floor of the wagon the night before and were tired. Regardless of the reason, the lack of cussing and yelling from the back of the wagon made for a much more pleasant journey. After bacon, biscuits, and coffee, Kara asked, in a polite tone of voice no less, if she could visit the bushes again.
Hell, you go with her this time, Morton. She seems to like you.
I ain't sure I'm comfortable, but...
You ain't being paid to be comfortable. There's nothing comfortable about this whole blasted trip.
Oh, I reckon you're right about that. Are you gonna unlock that chain from the floor for her?
Keep all three of them covered.
Brubaker took the key from his pocket. As he had done before, he let the heavy chain dangle after he'd unlocked it from the ring set in the floor. He climbed out of the wagon and moved back, drawing his gun as he did so. He stood directly behind the wagon, with Bo to the right and Scratch to the left, each of them holding a Winchester.
All right, climb out.
She started down the steps hesitantly. As she did so, the hanging chain swung between her ankles, and she swayed suddenly as it caused her to lose her balance. As she toppled off the steps, Scratch jumped forward to catch her. Scratch already had his right arm around Kara as she fell against him. He held the Winchester in his left hand. Brubaker whipped up his gun and pointed it at the young woman.
You step away from her, Morton. I'll shoot her if she tries anything.
Oh, settle down, dadgummit. She ain't trying anything. She just fell, that's all.
Thank you, Deputy.
Oh, now you don't have to call me Deputy, miss. It's just a temporary job. My name's Scratch.
I know.
All right, that's enough, blast it.
Brubaker grabbed the chain that linked Kara's hands together behind her back and jerked her away from Scratch.
We all know what you're trying to do, and it ain't gonna work. Come on, you. If you really got business you need to tend to.
But you said Scratch could...
Changed my mind.
He pulled and shoved her into the brush.
You know she fell into your arms on purpose, don't you?
Well, she might, but it's hard to be sure. Having a chain flopping around your feet really could trip a person up, I'd think.
I suppose. But she's got it in her head she can play up to you, no doubt about that.
Well, it won't do her any good. But I guess she's welcome to try.
Don't forget that a couple days ago she tried to cut you wide open with a razor.
Oh, shoot. That was before she knew me as well as she does now. Don't worry, Bo. I ain't some moonstruck kid.
They moved on a short time later, and Brubaker pushed the horses fairly hard all day. Everybody was tired by the time the deputy called a halt to make camp late that afternoon. They were in more rugged country now, as Scratch had predicted. The hills were steep rather than rolling, and a number of rocky bluffs cut across the landscape. They made camp where one of those bluffs dropped off sharply into a thickly wooded valley. A little creek flowed up to and over the edge of the bluff, forming a waterfall. Bo looked over the brink and saw spray rising up from the pool that the waterfall formed at the bottom.
It's a pretty nice place in a wild sort of way.
Yeah, I watered my horse down there at that pool more than once, and I expect every owl hoot in these parts has too. We'll fill our water barrels from the creek before we pull out in the morning.
Kara didn't ask for Scratch to accompany her this time when she tended to her needs. He was busy fixing supper anyway. But he saw her looking at him while Brubaker was leading her back and forth, and he smiled as he lowered his head toward the skillet full of bacon on the fire. Sure, she was loco and as dangerous as a bag full of wildcats, but she was also mighty nice looking, and Scratch had never minded the attention of a good-looking woman. That was all it would ever amount to, of course. She was on her way to Texas to hang for her crimes, and from what he knew of her, Scratch figured it was a well-deserved fate. But it was sad, too. She had gone wrong somewhere in her life, bad wrong, and that was just a pure D shame.
Riders coming!
Scratch straightened and stepped away from the fire, as he did so, picking up the rifle he had laid aside when he started to prepare supper. Bo held his Winchester, too, and Brubaker snatched his Henry from the driver's seat of the wagon. The deputy had just put Kara back into the vehicle and locked the door.
Hello, the camp. We're friendly. All right to come in?
Do it slow and easy with your hands in plain sight. You got a dozen rifles pointed at you.
Four riders moved up into the circle of light cast by the fire. They wore slouch hats and long dusters. Bo saw gun belts under the coats, and each man had the butt of a rifle sticking up from a saddle boot. As Brubaker had ordered, they had their hands half-lifted and well away from the weapons. Even though the strangers were dressed like white men, their faces had a ruddy glow that didn't come completely from the firelight, although the flames might have exaggerated the effect. Their skin color and their high cheekbones made it obvious these men were Indians.
Charlie Greywolf, is that you?
I thought I recognized that growl of yours, 42. All right, if we put our hands down now?
Yeah, put them down.
Brubaker lowered his rifle and came out from behind the wagon. Bo and Scratch followed suit.
This is an old friend of mine, Charlie Greywolf. I don't know the others, but I'd wager that they're members of the Cherokee Light Horse, too.
That's right. This is Duck Forbes, Walt Moon, and Joe Reeder.
Brubaker inclined his head toward the Texans.
Bo Creel and Scratch Morton, a couple of temporary deputies. What brings you boys out here?
I could ask the same thing of you, 42.
Transporting some prisoners down to Texas. They're going to Judge Southwick's court in Tyler.
Kind of off the main road, aren't you?
Yeah, and for good reason. We got trouble dogging us and we're trying to shake loose from it.
This is good country to throw somebody off your trail, all right. All right, if we get down and share your fire?
Sure. You're welcome to some coffee, too.
Grey Wolf grinned as he swung down from the saddle.
Only if you'll let us throw in some provisions for supper.
It's not necessary. I know when you boys are out on the scout, you travel light.
That's true. How do you know we're looking for somebody?
Light Horse doesn't send out Charlie Greywolf unless there's a mighty good reason. And those fellas with you look like they got plenty of bark on their hides, too.
It's true. We're looking for some men who raided a farm north of here. Slaughtered the whole family who lived there and looted the place. Not that there was much to steal.
Sounds like Hank Gentry's bunch. I got three of them locked up in here.
No, these were redskin scoundrels. One of them victims managed to write the name Kinlock in his own blood. Nat Kinlock's a Cherokee. We suspected for a while that he and some of his friends were behind a string of robberies over around Chickasha. Now we're sure of it, and we're gonna bring him in. Or plan him and his boys.
Well, I wish you luck. We'll share our camp tonight and go separate ways in the morning.
Sounds good.
The Cherokee lawmen began unsaddling their horses. There was a friendly camaraderie between Brubaker and the Indian lawman, and Bo and Scratch liked them as well. Tonight they could sleep a little easier, Bo mused. It was unlikely anybody would attack such a large, well-armed group. Although Hank Gentry's gang was supposed to be even larger, he reminded himself, so it would still be necessary to remain alert and stand guard all night. When they had finished eating, Brubaker spoke to Bo and Scratch.
All right, we'll feed the prisoners now.
Who do you have in custody?
Carol LaChance, Jim Elam, and Dayton Lowe.
That LaChance woman is said to be full of evil spirits, and the other two aren't much better. Gentry's gang have robbed and killed a number of Cherokees.
I know, and Judge Parker'd like nothing more than to hang them for it. But the authorities down in Texas have first claim on them because of the hell they raised down there before coming up here to the nations. Don't worry, they'll get what's coming to them.
As long as justice is done, that's all that matters, I suppose. I wish we could escort you all the way to the Red River to make sure you reach Texas safely, 42. We have a job of our own to do.
I understand. Glad we ran into you anyway. It'll be nice not having to worry as much about somebody jumping us tonight.
After the prisoners were fed and taken out of the wagon one by one to take care of their needs, the camp settled down for the night. Bo had the first watch, and Charlie Greywolf told Duck Forbes to take his turn then as well. Bo didn't mind having the company. It was easier to stay awake and alert if there was someone to talk to, and Duck proved to be a pleasant companion. He was short and stocky, with a round face that creased easily in a grin. He had been a member of the Cherokee Light Horse for a couple of years, he explained to Bo, as the two of them sat on rocks just outside the circle of light from the campfire.
My father's a teacher, and he always figured I would be too, but I couldn't just see sitting in a classroom all day. I always liked to be out doing things.
Bo knew that the Cherokee were maybe the only Indian tribe with a written language. The Cherokee Nation even had its own newspaper. As a people, they valued education, but a society needed lawmen too, so Bo thought Duck's decision was a good one. They sat and chatted for a while before settling down to pass the time in companionable silence. Other than a couple of trips to Fort Smith, Duck had never been anywhere except Indian territory, so he was especially interested in hearing about all the places where the Texans' wanderings had taken them.
One of these days, I'll see all that for myself, especially the ocean. Wouldn't it be something to stand there and look out over all that water, just going on and on like it's never gonna end?
Scratch took the second turn on guard, joined by lean, taciturn Jim Reeder. Bo said goodnight to Duck and rolled up in his blankets to get a few hours of sleep, knowing that Brubaker would want to be on the move again by dawn. Dayton Lowe was in a bad mood when Brubaker awoke the prisoners while the sky was just turning gray in the east. While Lowe was out of the wagon, he glared at Charlie Greywolf and the other members of the Cherokee Light Horse.
Filthy redskins. I could barely sleep last night because the stink of Indians was so strong around here.
Keep a civil tongue in your head.
Why? I ain't worried about hurting some damn buck's feelings. The savages probably don't even understand what I'm saying.
Greywolf and the other men ignored Lowe. They'd probably had to put up with ignorant insults like that from whites many times over the years, Bo thought.
Are you planning to cut through Massasauga Valley?
That's right.
That's the way the trail we've been following leads. Nat Kinlock has some family over that way. We think he may be figuring on hiding out with them. Since we're going in the same direction anyway.
Well, I'd be pleased to have you ride along with us for a while.
That was all right with Bo and Scratch, too. Although they would have gone along with whatever Brubaker decided, since he was in charge. After a quick breakfast of pan bread and coffee, the group started in a generally westward direction along the winding trail. The sun hadn't quite risen above the eastern horizon yet, although it was already painting the sky with red and gold light. The air was still and cold, and frost lay heavy on the grass, glittering as the light grew stronger. By mid-morning, the frost had melted and dried, and the sun was warmer as it washed over the rugged landscape. The going was rather slow, because the trail had to twist and turn so much to avoid ridges, deep gullies, and impassable cliffs. In many places, the trees crowded in close to the sides of the trail, which was barely wide enough to allow the wagon to pass. Bo, Scratch, Charlie Greywolf, and Duck Forbes rode in front of the vehicle, while the other Cherokee light horsemen brought up the rear. There wasn't room for them to flank the wagon. After several miles, the trees thinned somewhat, and the trail widened. Up ahead to the left of the trail loomed a rocky bluff. Out of habit, Bo studied it closely, searching for the glint of sunlight on metal that would tell him someone was up there.
Something else I'd like to see one of these days is a desert. Growing up here in the nations where there are trees and bushes everywhere you look, I can't imagine a place where there's nothing but sand. You and Scratch ever been to a desert, Bo?
Death Valley out in California. That's about as barren a place as you'd ever want to see. And white sands over in New Mexico territory. Miles and miles of sand, so white and bright, it'd just about blind you when the sun shines on it.
That sure would be something to see, all right. I'm gonna save my money, and after I put a few more years in the Light Horse, I'll...
Bo caught a glimpse of the puff of powder smoke from the top of the bluff, but he was already turning to look at Duck. The stocky Cherokee, his eyes wide with pain, swayed back and forth in the saddle as he pressed the hand to his chest. Blood welled between his splayed-out fingers, telling Bo that Duck was badly wounded. Everybody in the group had heard the shot and knew they were under attack.
Everybody spread out!
Take cover!
Both of those commands sent the riders scattering for the closest rocks or trees. Bo leaned over and grabbed the reins of Duck's horse. The tribal policeman had dropped them when he was shot. Clinging tightly to the reins, Bo led Duck's mount behind him as he galloped toward a cluster of boulders. He hoped Duck could manage to stay in the saddle. When he was safely behind the boulders, Bo dismounted almost before his horse stopped moving and sprang to the side of Duck's horse just as the young Cherokee toppled off the animal. Duck's mouth opened and closed several times as he looked up at Bo. He seemed to be struggling to say something. He couldn't get the words out, though. Bo ripped Duck's shirt open and saw the bullet holes still welling bright, frothy blood. Tearing off a piece of Duck's shirt, he wadded it up and shoved it into the opening as hard as he could. That would serve two purposes. It would slow down the bleeding and also close the wound temporarily, which would help Duck breathe.
Take it easy. Try not to move around any. You'll see those oceans and deserts yet, Duck.
Bo ran to his horse and pulled his Winchester from its sheath. He crawled up a huge slanting slab of rock so he could get a look at the trail and the bluff where the hidden rifleman was located. Several shots from a clump of trees on the other side of the trail drew his attention. He caught a glimpse of what looked like Scratch's cream-colored Stetson and watched until he got a better look at his old friend. Scratch poked the barrel of his rifle around a tree trunk and squeezed off a shot.
Scratch!
The silver-haired Texan looked over, grinned, and waved. Bo returned the wave, confident now that they were both all right. Bo turned his attention to the man on top of the bluff. Large boulders lined the edge of that outcropping. The rifleman was probably firing through a narrow gap between a couple of the rocks, which meant it would be almost impossible for their return fire to hit him. He could sit up there and keep them pinned down all day. Evidently, that wasn't his goal, because he shifted his aim to the wagon and started peppering it with slugs.
There! You and those boys get down as low as you can!
The fact that the prisoners were being endangered probably meant that the man on the bluff wasn't trying to free them. Indeed, he didn't seem to care if he killed them. That ruled out Hank Gentry and his gang. The most likely possibility was that the men being pursued by the Cherokee Light Horse had left someone behind to slow them down. In that case, the man wouldn't know who Bo Scratch and Brubaker were, nor why the wagon was traveling with Charlie Greywolf and the others. But to him, they would all be enemies anyway. The bullets were coming too close to the team. The normally stolid draft horses finally spooked and lunged forward against their harnesses, desperate to be out of the line of fire. They bolted, taking off along the trail and pulling the wagon behind them. Jake Brubaker broke out of the trees where he had taken cover.
42, no!
Let him go, Marshal!
Brubaker's hat suddenly flew off his head, plucked from it by a bullet. Even more than the shout from the Texans, that had to make him realize that he was out in the open, and that was a bad spot to be in right now. Another bullet kicked up dirt at his feet as he whirled toward the side of the trail and threw himself behind a log that was lying there. Bo opened fire on the bluff as the rest of the group resumed shooting. Brubaker was still in a bad spot. If they could keep the bushwhacker occupied for a few moments, it might give the deputy time to reach some better cover. Brubaker surged up into a run. He made it behind some trees and rocks, where he slid to the ground. Bo watched him lie there, panting heavily. As far as Bo could tell, the lawman wasn't hurt. The wagon careened around a bend in the trail and vanished from sight. Bo wasn't worried about the prisoners getting away. The runaway horses would slow down and stop as their panic wore off. The prisoners' chains and the lock on the door were secure. The biggest problem was that the wagon might overturn and crash before the team came to a stop. If that happened, the prisoners might be injured or even killed in the wreck. Knowing that his rifle wasn't going to make a difference in the fight, Bo slid back down to the bottom of the rock and hurried to the spot where Duck Forbes lay. Dropping to a knee beside the wounded man, Bo leaned over to check on his condition. The Texan's face took on a hard, grim cast as he saw the way Duck's eyes were staring sightlessly into the blue sky. He rested a hand on Duck's chest to make sure and found that it was motionless. While Bo was up in the rocks trading shots with the man on the bluff, the young Cherokee light horseman had crossed the divide.
I'm sorry, Duck. If I can, I'll settle the score for you. You have my word on that.
Whoever was up there on the bluff had chosen the perfect spot for an ambush. He could keep them pinned down until dark. But why just keep your enemies pinned down when you could close the jaws of a trap on them? Scratch and the others were all concentrating on the danger in front of them when something even worse could be coming up from behind. A bullet whistled past his head. Bo whirled as another slug smacked into the rock nearby, flattening this time instead of glancing off. The attackers were in the trees behind the group of lawmen. Bo flung himself aside as he heard the wind rip of yet another bullet past his ear. He wedged his body into a gap between boulders. The stony gap in which Bo had taken cover was narrow enough that he thought he might be able to work his way upward between the two slabs of rock. He braced his back against one side, his feet against the other. When he shoved himself upward, his progress was maddeningly slow. But eventually, he was high enough that he was able to pull himself on top of one of the slabs. From here, he could fire at the trees where the attackers were hidden. But his position also left him exposed to the man on top of the bluff. He rolled to his left as a bullet spanked off the rock only a few feet away from him. That put him behind a hardy bush that had forced its way through a crack in the rock on its eternal quest for sunlight. The bush didn't offer much real cover, but at least the man on top of the bluff couldn't see him as easily now. Bo stayed as low as he could and took advantage of the respite to study his situation. He seemed to be the only one on this side of the trail. Scratch and the others had taken cover in a small stand of trees to the left of the path. The gunmen who had come up from the rear were in some other trees on the same side of the trail as Bo. The bluff was on the opposite side. So, he was directly between the two forces, on an imaginary line that cut across the trail at an angle. Scratch, Brubaker, and the Cherokee Light Horseman were slightly off to one side, but still effectively caught between two fires. If there was some way for him to eliminate the man on the bluff, then Scratch and the others could turn all their attention to the threat from the rear and would have a better chance of fighting them off. Bo parted the branches a little and squinted toward the bluff. There was no way of knowing how long the boulders along the edge of the bluff had been perched there. Probably quite a while, judging by the way the earth was undercut beneath them, worn away by the elements. Sooner or later, some of those big rocks would topple.
Why not today?
The odds of him being able to accomplish that were slim, but he couldn't see any other options. If things continued like they were, eventually the attackers would pick off him and all of his friends. He thrust the Winchester's barrel through the brush and waited for the man on top of the bluff to fire again. Bo wanted to pinpoint the ambusher's location. After a few seconds, he spotted another jet of powder smoke from up there. Marking the exact site of the smoke, he was able to tell which boulder the rifleman was using for most of his cover. Bo drew a bead on the bluff at the base of that rock. Dirt flew in the air as his bullet smacked into its target. The would-be killer probably believed Bo had just missed badly. Bo sent shot after shot into the same place. He expected that when he paused to reload, the ambusher would take some more pot shots at him. Instead, the man seemed to be concentrating his fire on the trees where Scratch and the other men had taken cover. He must have decided that Bo wasn't a threat to be bothered with anymore. Bo could only hope that the varmint was making a bad mistake about that. The Winchester held 15 rounds. Without rushing, Bo made sure of his aim and sent all 15 shots, one after the other, into the same spot at the base of the boulder. He waited to see if it was going to move. The big rock didn't budge. Bo had never been the sort of hombre to give up. If he had been, despair might have welled up inside him at that moment. He was convinced that his idea was a good one and would show some results sooner or later. But would he have to lie here and keep shooting all day, firing off hundreds of bullets before they did any good? By that time, he and the others would probably all be dead. He didn't let that knowledge stop him. Instead, he reloaded, reminding himself that while he had several boxes of cartridges in his saddlebags, he would only have a few more rounds in his pocket after he emptied the Winchester this time. That fact right there was enough to emphasize that he was running out of time. They all were. He aimed the Winchester at the bluff and started firing again. His shoulder was starting to get a little sore from the rifle's recoil. He ignored that and continued shooting. The boulder shifted. At first, Bo didn't notice, and even squeezed off another shot before he saw what was happening. The big rock tilted forward, and once its mass shifted, that was all it took. Bo's slugs had dug out enough dirt underneath it to destroy its balance.